Welcome to the Hot Level Podcast. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres, Rockies, lots to talk about. Ryan, where would you like to start?
You got to beat bad teams, Kevin. You know, the Padres are coming off a sweep of the Dodgers, arguably the class of the National League, even with all of their injury problems. That doesn't matter if you don't take care of business against bad teams. And there are a few teams in baseball worse than the Rockies.
There are a few teams in baseball worse than the Rockies. And then you've got the Pirates, Marlins, Pirates, Rockies again. Now, Pirates are for now, a contending team. Pirates, I haven't looked ahead to see what the starting pitching looks like. But, I mean, the Pirates are not the Rockies or the Marlins, who the Marlins got decidedly worse, by the way, at the trade deadline. And the Rockies are just bad, though the Rockies did come in here and to San Diego and sweep the Padres in May. I think that was a lot different situation. We can talk about that later. But you are absolutely correct. It is my favorite statistic because it's the one that I believe, like, there's always exceptions to rules. I finally found a statistic where there is only one exception. And it's amazing to me that the 2016 Texas Rangers are the only team in baseball history to have made the playoffs in a season in which they did not have a winning record against losing teams. So to sum that up, you basically have to beat bad teams to get to the playoffs.
Yeah. And, you know, we've talked all season, Kevin, that for the Padres, a real key is going to be sort of squirreling away wins so that when the winter comes, so to speak, it doesn't ruin your season, right? They've endured a really bad streak, bracketed around the All-Star break. They've come back. They've, lost two games since the All-Star break returned. They have a stretch here against some bad teams where, you know, gosh, what do we think is a good number here? I mean, if they can take each of the next three series, you got to think that they really like their playoff chances at that point. Right now, they're in the second wild card position, game and a half outside of the first wild card position, 4.5 back of the Dodgers for the National League West lead.
Yeah, I'm going to think it's the next five series, and that would be through the two Colorado series, the two Pittsburgh series, and say if you win each of those, which means that I'm going to say that, you know, the way that they're playing now, they could get a sweep in one of them and they could drop, you know, two of three in Pittsburgh or something like that, whatever. But then you're 10-5 and then you're 13 games over. And then you're basically looking to just cruise into the playoffs I'm not saying that's what you might be trying to win the division and get that first round bye by that point, because maybe the Dodgers, who are really banged up, and I don't know about like how much better it's going to get for the Dodgers. And so maybe, but all you got to do then is go like 500 the rest of the way and kind of, you could set up your pitching. However, whatever it is you want to do, though, I don't know that the Padres are going to set up their pitching as much as say if they had like the three dominant starters from 2022. But your point, I'm trying to support it here and say, yes, this is, and the reason that I guess like it kind of stands out to me is it's not how the Padres have done business. It's like, but I really believe no matter who the Padres play now, I'm not, because they don't have the Phillies coming up on the schedule, right? They go into a series believing that they can win that series. And it's like a real legitimate belief. It's not like, oh yeah, anyone can win a baseball or whatever, you know, like, oh no, we think we're good. The Padres' play is finally matching what they say, and I think that's a really good place to be in. So I really don't think, if this is true about them, what I just said, that this should be an issue, this period coming up. This should be when the Padres separate themselves.
Right. History tells us that they're going to make it as hard on themselves as humanly possible. But you're right. What has the difference been? I think this is a different ball club. In the last 2-3 weeks, is it as simple as saying the starting pitching is delivering when it wasn't before, or is there more to it?
That's a really good point, because that is a huge part of it. I don't care, like, because I really do believe that this is who they said they were. This is who they said they would be. Take a look. I wrote about it before the break, or coming out of the break. This is who Mike Schilt's teams are. You talk about getting better. You work on getting better, and then you play better. You know, you just get better as the season goes on. And so far, and it's been this way in his career, that is what is happening. We talked about it a lot during the season. They were playing better than what their record was. And if they just stayed the course, they believe this is what they'd look like. I believe all that's true. But Ryan, yes, if their starting pitching still had a penchant that every three or four games, or sometimes two games in a row, the starting pitcher gave up four runs in the first inning, then, you know, none of that would matter, right? Like, because then you don't get a chance to situationally hit. Right. You don't get a chance for a two run inning to be followed by a three run inning. And suddenly you're up 5-1. You don't get that chance because you're down 4-0 and you're playing baseball different. And it feels different when you're at bat. So for all the other feel good stuff, yes, it begins with the starting pitching. And I don't have the numbers in front of me. It's been markedly better over the last 3.5 weeks.
Now, they're not out of the woods when it comes to starting pitching. That's the one area of their roster that they sort of only half addressed here at the deadline. If you look at the pitching probables for the weekend, you've got Randy Vasquez starting Friday night, Martin Perez making his Padre debut, acquired from the Pirates on Tuesday. You've got him going Saturday, and then it's TBA on Sunday because of some concern. Well, I don't know if it's concern. How are we categorizing the way they're treating Michael King at the moment?
I think just careful. And I think that they're going to play it like, well, this is what we've always done. I mean, for the most part, he's been like the guy going. And look, maybe it's still Michael King and they want to see how Friday works out. Right. And they want to see, do they have to use the bullpen? Do they have to use Brian Hoeing? Do they have to use Alec Jacob? Or could these guys be available that we would start Hoeing and go to Jacob? And, you know, now all of a sudden you're through five innings perhaps. And if things go well, and now it's just like a regular game because you used your longish guys, and maybe that's what they're trying to do. Or maybe Michael King could go, because I think it would be 7 days rest. And on Saturday or Sunday, which is why I thought that he would go, that having Martin Perez in there was enough to, all right, cool. That gives King some extra rest. The fact is, even if you push Michael King to Monday, right, you gave him 9 days rest, play it out over the course of the rest of the season. And Michael King, there's almost no way, if he keeps pitching like he is, that you wouldn't project he's at like 160 by the end of the season. And that's a lot. And then do you not have Michael King for the playoffs?
Right.
So my answer to you is I don't know exactly what they're doing, but there's just a lot of things that could be in play here that this could be like a pivotal time in the season of showing us what is it that they're expecting from Michael King. Heck, look. There was an off day yesterday. They announced this like 2 minutes after I walked out of the clubhouse, and I was the last person in there. So my point being, they waited till there was no easy way to ask those questions. Michael King could have something. I don't believe so. I believe the vague answer I got was that, you know, well, we're just going to wait and see. Okay. It's probably not that big of a deal.
Right. He took a comebacker during that game in Baltimore last Saturday. Maybe that factors into it somehow. Don't know. But again, when you talk about, you know, as they sort of, if they can stack some wins here in the next, say, five series, right, 2 weeks, all of a sudden that's getting you into mid to late August. What can you gain by having a big wild card lead in September? Maybe it means that you can sort of power down Michael King for 2 weeks. Right? Maybe then he's available in the playoffs, whether that's as a starter or fireman reliever type guy. That's a role that he played really well when he was in New York.
You make some good points. Something I've been thinking about since the trade deadline is what they're going to do in the playoffs. And I would imagine that they get very creative, unless Joe Musgrove is back and throwing six innings and he's like 2022 playoffs, Joe Musgrove. They could get real creative in the postseason of how they're going to try to get through. And that's why I do think that was very interesting, and it could prove to be very good trade deadline. We'll see. But like that, this is the kind of pitching staff now where you do have options. It's not, they beat the Mets in 2022 because the Mets starters that had got them through, the Padres beat those guys. And the Mets didn't have, and what Mike Schilt has now is, if his starter is not doing well in the third inning of game two of a series, boom, going to my bullpen and we're going to piece this thing through. And he has that ability. Like he has like where you'd feel really good about what they can do. So really good point about, I don't anticipate, no matter what, that Michael King in the playoffs is a guy that you're sending out in game three to go six innings.
Right, right. Yeah, not sure that's going to happen. Hey, I want to ask you about two pitchers here. Both of them new, relatively. Let's start with Martin Perez. He starts Saturday. Again, was an offseason acquisition by the Pirates, who consider themselves sort of contenders. Traded here, the Padres owe him a couple million through the end of the year. What are they getting in Martin Perez?
I mean, a guy that does know how to go out and you know, eat up innings, a guy who has had good starts this year. And I think it was exactly, it was like we were in Washington when I wrote about how the Padres felt good that they would be able to get a starting pitcher because of all the different options they had. And they weren't, even though they did make some offers and talk to people about top of the rotation guys, that was not their target. Their target was a guy to put at the back end of the rotation, and that they could get that guy. And that is exactly what they did. Like it was like that thing came together at the last minute. They kept different people on the hook, right? Like, hey, we might be interested in this guy. And so they're talking with the Pirates. And then when it came together that they got all these other relievers, it was like, all right, now we're going to get our 4-5 guy. And that's what they did. They went out and got him. And that's all they're expecting him to be. This was not like, oh, getting Martin, not every trade acquisition is the thing that is like going to power you over the hump. This trade acquisition was to get them over the hump, like help get them over the hump, to fill out innings that there was just no possible way that they were going to fill out. Now, they need him to be able to do that, that he can't be Rich Hill. Rich Hill was more like an anchor. I mean, all credit to Rich Hill for having like this incredibly long career, but Rich Hill was an anchor. I'm not saying they would have made the playoffs without Rich Hill. I mean, you know, if it weren't for Rich Hill, I'm saying the guy did not help them. He hurt them at the end of the season.
Right. And that's where, you know, it's so funny. Had they acquired Martin Perez from any team other than the Pirates, I don't think we'd be making these comps. But he's a left-hander who you got from the Pirates at the deadline. You're talking about him filling a very specific, seemingly inconsequential role. But man, I mean, last year's Padre team, two more wins and they're in the playoffs. I'm not saying it's going to cost them two games, but if they got somebody other than Rich Hill at the deadline last year, maybe we're having a different conversation.
And you, yes. Now here's the difference. I think it is 8 games better than they were last year like this. And they also, they went out and they got other guys that are, or should be theoretically, difference makers. Whereas, you know, I'm not even sure what last year at the trade deadline was. It was we're not giving up, but we don't really think that we're going to make it. So all right, here, this is what we did. This year, these were consequential moves, and then a move to get them through. A guy that you knew was going to start either Friday or Saturday. So he's starting tomorrow, Saturday. So we tape this on Friday. And then, you know, Martin Perez hasn't pitched in 8 days. He can come back in on 4 days rest. I mean, this is a guy that makes sure that Michael King and, you know, for that matter, Matt Waldron, you know, for that matter, Dylan Cease, I mean, who's a workhorse. But like you get toward the end of the season and you start to trying to be make sure that guys are peaking in October, you needed to get a guy that was going to eat up some innings for you.
Right. An all-star 2 years ago for the Texas Rangers. A guy, Kevin, this may surprise you, but they've acquired another former Texas Ranger. I'm sure. Sure, we're shocked here. Another guy, because it's my favorite stat right now in Padre land. Alec Jacob, called back up to the big leagues last year. How many runs has he allowed as a major league, or called up to the big leagues last week? How many runs has he allowed in the major leagues in his career? Zero. Yeah. This is a guy who we've been talking about for a year, made a brief stint with them last year, went down with arm issues, is now back. Man, he is an interesting, neat guy to watch pitch. Yeah. What do we think kind of his ceiling floor is here the second half of the season?
Well, I mean, it's a very, very, very deceptive delivery. It really is. It's fun to watch because it's like, well, wait, we know why Robert Suarez or, you know, Tanner Scott are doing what they do. But how is this guy doing it? But it's that it's a very, very deceptive delivery. People aren't used to seeing it. You don't get a lot of looks at him, right? Like he's going to come in and face top 6-7 batters, right? Like you're not prepared for it. And it's like the perfect role for him.
Yeah, no, you're right. And again, in a bullpen where You know, they're not going to ask him to pitch the seventh or eighth innings.
They're not going to ask him to come in and maybe in certain situations at the top of the order, but no, this is a guy who's going to, it's what a reliever is, generally a reliever. He's not a closer. He's not a top setup man. He's a guy who they feel good. Like I said, they might piece together some outings with Hoeing as your like long opener, and then Alec Jacob coming in behind them and hoping that can get them to five innings.
Yep. Gonzaga Bulldog grew up loving Jurickson Profar, which I think makes us all feel old, probably.
I bet you it makes Jurickson Profar feel old.
I'm sure it does. Kevin, before we go here, and I'm not going to keep you all day, the Padres, I think we need to stop for a minute, take 4 minutes of our time, and talk about the significance of winning a season series against the LA Dodgers.
Yeah, and it's a little bit of a, you know how when you stop trying to do something and then you're just concentrating on taking care of yourself and doing what you do well? For so many years, the Dodgers were a measuring stick. And the fact is, they are still a measuring stick, but they've stopped being looked at as a measuring stick. And I really do believe, and I don't mean this to like, because that's a whole other, it could be like its own podcast. I'm not blaming Bob Melvin for anything. I'm saying that Mike Schilt came in and had the benefit of seeing the way that some things were done, the way that they weren't done. And Mike Schilt just talked to these guys from the start, his kind of leadership council. And so then it could spread out among the team that we're going to just get better as the season goes on. All right. That's it. All right. Wait, guys, you know what? Today you didn't do this right. But, you know, it's cool. We're going to get better as the season goes on. All right, guys. Hey, great job today. Won this game. But here's like, we could have done this better. We could have killed this team. We're going to get better as the season goes on. That's it. They stopped concentrating about who's the opponent, the Dodgers, whoever it was. And about two, three weeks ago, players started just volunteering as in conversation about the focus and about that we're not getting ahead of ourselves. And it was just a different way they were talking about it. And I think you saw that play out over the weekend, right? This is the weekend against the Dodgers. Was they just focused on Tyler Glasnow is the pitcher we're facing tonight. These are the hitters we're facing tonight. Like the Dodgers are no longer like a big deal to them. That was what I believe is a big part of it. They also played well, the Dodgers. Now, look, I didn't make a big deal out of this that the Dodgers are hurt. I mean, we all know they are. The Padres don't have you, Darvish, Joe Musgrove, or Fernando Tatis Jr., right? I didn't make a big deal out of it. There were plenty of games that they lost since Tatis been gone. Now, by the way, they're like 10 over since he's been gone, but there've been plenty of games they've lost during that time where Tatis could have made all the difference in the world with one at bat. But I'm not going to write about that every night. So like the Dodgers are missing people. Absolutely. They are, but so are the Padres. Now I'm not saying the Padres are missing the equivalent of what the Dodgers are. But there've been plenty of times where the Dodgers have been missing people and they came in here and swept the Padres.
Yep. No, you're right. Well, and for the Padres to do it the way that they did it, I thought was interesting, you know, to walk off on Blake Treinen or to walk off on the Dodgers. I'm sorry, to walk off on Alex Vezina, yeah. On Tuesday, and then to come back the next day and just spank them. I mean, it was, you know, rare is the time when the Padres have a win in hand against the Dodgers fairly early. And they did, right? It was what, 8-1.
And hold on to it.
Exactly.
Right. And you, really good point, Ryan. I mean, it's neither here nor there, but I had the exact same thought. Like, yeah, that's not something that we've seen. And here's what I've seen. Walk off feeling great. Next night, Dodgers are the ones that win 9-1 and say, hey, little boys, like, you know, we're still in charge here. Or Padres win the first two series and then the Dodgers don't let them win another game all year. Or the Padres, you know, win the first two games of a series and the Dodgers, you know, outscore them 20-2 the next two games of a series. Like, that's what I have seen, because the Dodgers are, you know, the dominant guys. Look, they still have three games to play in Los Angeles in September. There are still, 52 games left for the Padres. There's a lot that could still happen. I do believe there's weight behind their words. And here's, because this is like how I'll treat a source. This is how I view life. the Padres are doing what they said they were going to do. And to me, there's weight to that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They're not just now talking about, yeah, this is what we're doing. This is what we're doing. It's like, well, that's easy to say in hindsight. Huh. They are doing what they said they would do. And to me, there is weight behind that.
Absolutely. I want to leave it right here. You know, I always kind of put you on the spot and let's do that again. I retweeted something the other day. I've seen it 500 times on Twitter since. Do you remember the Andy Green "we're coming" speech? After yes. the night the Dodger, Andy Green and Doc Roberts were shoving each other. Do you remember
yes.
that?
Yes.
What did you make of that in real time?
Look, Andy Green could be, it always amazed me that Andy wasn't more effective. And we could do another whole podcast on that because he yeah. believed in his guys and he believed in what Preller was selling. Like all managers who've worked for AJ, you know, there was some friction, but, you know, until now, But he believed in what AJ, he believed in the vision, and I thought it was a great speech. It was before its, well, it wasn't before its time because he wasn't saying it was going to happen tomorrow. As a matter of fact, in the speech, if I remember correctly, it was, we're not doing it now, but that it's going to happen. And there is real conviction behind it. I know Andy well. I believe that he believed it. And I think that you always knew what we knew and Andy knew at the time, he wasn't going to be here for it.
Right.
If I'm trying to even remember, he might have said that in there, but I don't think he did. It's just that he knew he was, I know, like I said, I know him, and he was so aware of the fact, because that just doesn't happen for the most part, that right. the guy who's there for the, you know, the horrible times is also the guy there when it turns around. He would have loved to have been, but that's just not reality. And so that's what I remember at the time is like, you know, maybe you're right, but you know, like, but I also remember that it was true and he believed it and he wanted it to be that way so bad. And I hope that I haven't talked to him about this. I believe who he is, that he's happy for the Padres, and even though there's almost no players here left, and that he feels a tiny bit a part of it, as everyone who was here should a little bit feel that way.
Sure. Andy Green back then said, again, it's not about winning series. It's going to be about winning seasons.
Yeah.
And it took till the year 2024, but the Padres yeah. won a season series from the LA Dodgers. I'm not saying this was a long time ago, Kevin, but the Padres were wearing blue.
They were wearing blue except that night, right?
That night they were wearing the cool brown. Yeah.
The old sort of weird hodgepodge sort of throwbacks kind of. Yeah.
Kind of.
It's that was a really good it was just so early and you knew that almost everyone on that team was not going to be there when he was talking about what he was talking about. That's what right. you know, it was like, okay. Thought Eric Hosmer might still be here, but
well, they're still paying him. Does that count? Well, hey, we both got stuff to do today, Kevin. I enjoy. We'll have Jeff Sanders out at the ballpark the next couple of days. And then we will talk early next week about, who knows, maybe the Padres playing another middling team.
Yes. Yes. It will be. I do. I'm with you. I'm glad you started the way you did. I believe this is a huge series, you know, and try to always be like, look, it's the. But no, we are now at the start of August. And this is a team you crush. That doesn't mean you sweep them. Stuff happens. It's baseball. But this is a team you crush. And, you know, but you are correct when you said they'll do it the hard way. They'll lose 2 or 3 and the sky will be falling. And that's what we'll be talking about on Tuesday. And then we'll just go from there.
Right. Padres have roughly 8 weeks left in the regular season, by the way. 8 weeks left. It's crazy when you think about it this way. When you were first reporting to spring training in, I believe, on Valentine's Day. So
yes, someone just asked me about Korea. I was like, was that this year?
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.